Hello and welcome to the Rogue Monkey Podcast. We are back. Season 12 is here, and over the next few months, we're bringing you more stories that will motivate, inspire, and support you on your own journeys, be that personal or professional. We believe that everyone has a rogue monkey within them, and we're here to share the stories of those who take the leap, chase their dreams, and ultimately forge their own path in the world. We've got lots of content being shared on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Just search for the Rogue Monkey Podcast. Finally, we are powered by 2017, the business performance brand, which you can find out more about in the show notes. We're kicking off season 12 with a conversation that started in sport, but ended up in the world of education. Fabian Spies, our guest today, is the Elite Athlete Education Officer at Minerva Virtual Academy, a unique online school that supports young athletes balancing academics and their sport. Over the next 2 weeks, we'll be exploring the journey of firstly Fabian, from a former footballer to where he is now, and then next week we speak to Hugh, the founder of Minerva, both of which are unique and fascinating conversations. So let's go with episode 91 of the Rogue Monkey Podcast, featuring Fabian Spies of Minerva Virtual Academy. Hello, Fabian. Welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for having me. Yeah, really good. A bit cold at the moment, but all is well.
Well, we're well on the way to the summer, hopefully. We've turned the year and we're heading in the right direction, and obviously really grateful for you sharing some time with me. So would you like to give our listeners and viewers out there a little bit of an introduction as to who you are and a bit about your story?
Yeah, pleasure. Where to start, really? So I guess right at the beginning is always a good point. So I'm originally actually born in Germany. You probably can't tell by the accent, but as a young child, moved around the world quite extensively. So lived in Dubai, Spain, Germany, obviously, where I was born. And I started playing football when I was in Spain as a mechanism of really trying to, you know, make friendships. Previously, when I was living in Dubai, football, you know, it wasn't really an acknowledged sport. But as we transitioned to Spain, new school, new surroundings, I found that football was one of those things that just allowed me to really click with other children and build those relationships and friendships. And from there onwards, really, I found out that I was actually quite good. And that was sort of the beginning of my footballing journey, so to speak. To cut a long story short a little bit, I, you know, ended up playing football professionally for Notts County. I also did an apprenticeship there and played at various clubs throughout the UK. And there's this, I suppose, quite a journey in between that, which is what I suppose you're going to touch on in a little bit more depth.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, plenty of threads for me to pull on there. First thing, in terms of like heritage and growing, or at least being born in a different part of the world, did you, or do you find that that early experience has had a role in your journey to where you are now?
Most definitely. I always look at it from two different lenses. One of the, I suppose, strands that I have at the minute is I haven't necessarily grown up with a group of friends in a particular place. So those friendships haven't really been developed, and I don't have those in the UK where I live now. But likewise, what I think, moving around the world has really given me is that adaptability and flexibility to sort of, you know, go into new surroundings and feel very comfortable with that. I'm someone who now likes to manage lots of different tasks rather than be very focused on just one. And I think that's come from, you know, moving around so much and always changing those surroundings. And it's given me a great perspective on different cultures, you know, different people. Like I said, I've met a lot of different children and friends, really. They are still friends, although not, you know, not the close ones, perhaps. It's been really, really interesting. And, you know, part of when I did my master's as well, which I can touch on a little bit more depth later, where I explored my own experiences, part of that journey, I think, led me to experience certain emotions when I was in football as well. I don't know if that makes sense, but I can touch on it in a bit more depth.
So, so I want to jump into the football stuff because I think there's a lot of athletes out there, both in guests that we've already spoken to, and I know a few guests that we've got coming up, that they have their sporting experience, and that transition to what comes next can be quite a rocky road, and actually feel like a little bit, not lost perhaps, but perhaps you kind of just trying to find your place in the world and what the next path is and where you're going to apply your passions and stuff. So talk us through that period of your life, because I think, I'm guessing that's had quite a significant impact on the journey that's led you to this point.
Yeah, so obviously in life we have constant transitions, whether it's in education, in sports, family, there's always something that's potentially changing. For me, the biggest and most notable transition was going from living in Dubai, from a private school, going into a apprenticeship at Notts County, where I was then at 16 living away from home, not with my parents, didn't know anyone in Nottingham at the time. And you're going into a completely different environment, also a performance environment, because obviously the goal of an apprenticeship is that, you know, at the end of that, you get your professional contract. So there was that element of pressure as well. And what I found that transition did to me was I developed what we call an athletic identity, or an over-athletic identity, which I've gone on to do some research on as well. But basically that, that identity as an athlete took over from Fabian the person. And I was so engrossed in that footballing environment that I ended up putting a lot of pressure on myself. And it's one of the big things that I advocate now, is that, you know, all athletes are primarily humans and people first. And, you know, then they are just, you know, someone who does sport and is good at their sport. That's how I like to say it. And it had a really big impact on my mental health, that specific transition, especially going back to 2010, when really no one was speaking about mental health at the time either. You know, I never ever had a coach or anyone come up to me when I was playing saying, you know, are you doing all right from a mental health point of view? Is there anything that you need from us? So yeah, that was really the biggest transition. And then obviously you're going into other transitions where I then received a professional contract. That's, you know, you're going into a completely different environment, playing for the first team, going out on loan to different clubs. Those are all transitions that were constantly happening, really.
There's so many things I want to delve into, because having been an athlete, not to your level, but certainly experienced a sporting journey where it became a defining period of my life. I look back now, and it's funny that you talked about you like having lots of different things. And I think and I'm sure there's studies out there that look at it, but if you took a group of former athletes and looked at their adult non-sporting lifestyle, if that makes sense, their work lifestyle, if you like, and their just general lifestyle in terms of the activities they get up to, and put that alongside somebody who's never had that sporting experience, the actual transition, as you mentioned, can be a really challenging period. But I do think there's almost like some superpowers that come out of that sporting experience. And I talk to people now and they go, how do you do so much? Why are you always doing this and doing that? And I kind of go, well, I've never not been doing loads all the time, because as a sports person, that's what you do. You know, your life is immersed in 1,001 things, and you're either training or traveling to training, or you're traveling to a competition, or, you know, what, training camps, whatever it is. And actually, what's kind of your viewpoint around that? Because obviously there is that balance between when you're an athlete and you're transitioning, having that strong mental health, but equally taking some of the huge traits, I guess, from that sporting experience and applying them to your adult life.
Yeah, well, I mean, being an athlete is a 24/7 job, and this is, I think, what sometimes we don't realize when we're going in from youth sport into professional sport. The pressure builds and it becomes very all-consuming unless we know how to manage that very well. So you're, like you say, you're always thinking either about what have you eaten, how was your last game, how's your next game, you know, the nerves build, have you slept enough? You always have these doubts, have you trained well enough today? You know, so you're always thinking about these things and trying to manage that process. But At the same time, when I was playing, I was also not doing very much. I wasn't being stimulated outside of the sport. I had this, thought process where, and it was sort of drilled into us a little bit as well, where we were told, outside of training, you have to go and rest up, go and get your feet up, you have a game tomorrow, don't do anything, don't go out for a coffee, just go home and relax. And that, I think, is probably one of the worst things that you can sometimes do, because, when you're sat at home by yourself, all you have is just constant thoughts. Those thoughts are just reinvigorated all the time. They come into you. It's like, oh, okay. And you're worrying. And that's how I experienced it. And I always go back. It's probably one of my biggest mistakes, that when I came out of the apprenticeship program, where, the educational element is mandatory, going into the professional environment, I always said, I need to solely focus on football and that's it, really. And that's the biggest mistake that I made, because actually, if I'd have done some form of education, hobbies, other things that would have kept me occupied and released that pressure a little bit for me to say, actually, football doesn't work out, I can go into this career because I've been training for it and I've been studying for it. And I also think it's a way of keeping the mind engaged in terms of decision making. My position was as a goalkeeper. Obviously, the brain needs to be exercised, stimulated. And I always thought that not, consistently engaging the brain actually had an impact on my decision making a little bit further down the line, where, my decisions were slower. I started making a lot of mistakes, and that sort of crept into my game. And I always do think that was part of that.
So talk us through the post-athlete period, if you like. So obviously it was a challenging transition, as you mentioned, but when do you feel like your feet started touching the ground, if you like, and you started to feel like you actually had your sat-nav pointing in a direction that you felt sort of comfortable with?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's probably still going like this. So when I was released from Notts County, I went to play for Torquay United, and there were various, in terms of wage and various things, it probably wasn't the right move for me, but I did it anyhow, because at that point you're a young footballer and you sort of say to yourself, I need to go and play whatever, and you make those sacrifices and those decisions. If I were to tell people what I was earning at that point, they'd probably be like, no way. From that point onwards, I then decided actually I should start doing something to prepare myself. At that time, I was still very much, within that football mindset. So one of the things that the PFA offer is a sports journalism course, which probably I would say about 90% of those that do higher education will probably do, because it's a fast track degree. It's the easiest one. Everyone knows it's talked about within the footballing community. It's like, just go and do that. So wrongly, I went with that because I just thought it would be something easy to do on the side and it wouldn't take too much effort. But as I, did completed that, I then found myself in semi-professional football part-time, thinking, actually, I need to start earning some money some other way now. So I live in Staffordshire. Bet365 is quite a big company here. So I, through my degree, was able to get a role there, combining that with semi-professional football. And I went into that and, pretty much, I think it was a couple of weeks in, I was like, I cannot do this, basically, because I didn't feel fulfilled. I didn't feel like I was having a purpose. And, my whole purpose now comes from what the experiences I had as a footballer and trying to help the younger generation not make the same mistakes that I did back then. So I decided to go back to university to study a master's, which was then in sports business management. And I related that to education, personal development, mental health, tried to make it as relevant as possible to those topics that I was interested in. And once I completed that, I went to work for a US recruitment company, so helping young athletes into the American scholarship system. And that's ultimately led me to my role with Minerva's Virtual Academy now, where, I work for, essentially, we're an online school trying to support young athletes with their education alongside their sporting careers. And I have an active role in terms of mentoring them, supporting them, and sort of guiding them. Again, trying to use my experiences of what I've learnt throughout to help them not make those same mistakes. And what I find very interesting is that every sport is very different, and it seems that sport has come on a little bit since I was younger, but there's still a lot of room for improvement in terms of how things can be done and how athletes are supported overall.
Well, we'll come on to the Minerva Virtual Academy stuff in a minute, because there was a couple of words you said there that I mentally jotted down. Purpose, I think, was a huge one, and that sense of fulfillment. And I think there's a lot of people out there who over the last 4 or 5 years can pinpoint, for me it was certainly during that first 12 months of the pandemic, where all sports stopped. And even though I hadn't been a full-time sports person, if you like, for maybe 7 or 8 years at that point, I still felt suddenly a huge identity crisis, because there was no sport. The thing that I added to the world was taken away. And I think, you know, in the bigger picture, obviously, there were much worse things going on. But I reflect on that and think sport has become such a core part of who I am as a person, but also my wider life. Like, my friends are generally all either athletes, coaches, or partners of those. And you get to a point where actually it completely dominates your after sport life, if that makes sense. So on this journey you had after football, what was the first recollection you had of that fulfillment, if you like? Can you pick out any experiences where you suddenly went, oh, this is ticking some boxes for me, this is something that's really starting to fulfill me?
Yeah, so particularly I remember when I was when I started working with a US recruitment company, we managed to get a young football apprentice a full scholarship at, you know, a Division I university worth $80,000 a year. And for me, that was like, wow, you know, he's going to America. It's something that I'd always wanted to do, but ultimately couldn't in the end, because I decided to go down the professional route. And once you obviously get a professional contract, you can't really go to America anymore, because you're not classed as an amateur athlete. But for me, that was so fulfilling for him to sort of go through that journey. I know he's had a wonderful experience playing, you know, at a great university, doing what he loves at the same time whilst he's getting a degree, you know, to cover his education. So that's definitely for me probably the number one where I sort of have that recollection. I also did some mentoring through a charity called the True Athlete Project, and that was very rewarding through a year-long period. Although I can't pinpoint one specific moment, it's just little bits where, you know, you feel really fulfilled. Just supporting them, you know, being that person there who's there to listen to them, because that's something that I never really had. As I said earlier, you know, no one ever really came to me to say, if you know, what's up, can we help you in any way, you know, what's going on. And you know, for me, that's what I enjoy doing now, and it really, like I say, gives me a lot of purpose.
The True Athlete Project is something that I think a few of our former guests are involved with, and I think it's such a valuable thing. And I think for me, moving forwards, like you say, sport is certainly heading in the right direction. Whether it's there yet is open to the jury, but also sport to sport is so different. You know, I hear certain things in certain sports, and fortunate enough to do some work cross sports, and you hear things and you think, really? But then you hear other things and think, wow, that's incredible. So for you, kind of finding your way, and this, let's talk about more the concept of Minerva before we dive into it. And actually, the ability to give someone something that you wish you'd had, if you like, and that's the wraparound support services and the kind of integrated education that Minerva provides. When was that first on your radar? And talk us through that journey into what it is now.
It's really interesting, because I mean, I just remember I was scrolling down LinkedIn one day, and all of a sudden I came onto this job post, and it was, you know, elite athlete education officer. And I was like, you know, what is this? You know, never heard of it. So I did some some Googling, looked into it, and, you know, it's like, wow, this is something that I've never even heard of, you know, like a flexible school for young athletes. So basically I just decided to sort of ring, you know, give a call and inquire and, you know, say, can you give me a little bit more information about this? I'm really interested because, you know, when I was a young footballer and I was on that apprenticeship pathway, basically we only had the option to do a BTEC in sport. And I was sort of thinking along the lines of, well, actually, you know, Minerva's Virtual Academy offers A-levels. Maybe that's something that could have been done then. And I basically, you know, just had one call that led to another call that then led to a job interview. And then all of a sudden I was in the role. And the role is, you know, very varied, essentially. But we are trying our best to change, you know, how, you know, young athletes are essentially educated to a certain extent and how they're balancing both commitments in their lives. You know, some schools really don't understand some of the sacrifices and some of the challenges that they're going through. And, you know, we've heard stories where there are athletes who, you know, the school is penalizing them because they're having to go to a tournament or an event, you know, and we don't think that's right. You know, young athletes who are looking to pursue their, you know, their careers in sport need additional, I suppose help, and not be penalized for pursuing a passion of theirs, you know, even though it's taking a lot of their time. You know, we want to ensure that both elements of their lives are balanced equally, because they are equally important. But we don't obviously want the education to hamper their sport. And we see it, you know, in different sports. Swimming, obviously, you know, there's such a commitment for training early mornings. We hear very often that swimmers are exhausted at school, falling asleep in classes. And, you know, we think through our model and virtual education, that can be changed. Likewise, you know, we offer, like I said, one-on-one mentoring with every athlete. So, you know, we don't want them to make those mistakes, although obviously you can learn through mistakes, but we want to try and build awareness into, you know, what a journey as a professional is going to look like. Because if we can prepare them about, you know, their identity, their values, and help them understand a better self of themselves, then that's going to lead to hopefully a better experience transitioning into professional sport. You might hear that there's so many young athletes who quit at certain points. You know, I left football in the end because for me I developed various traumas through the sport, which for me kept reoccurring, and it was very difficult for me to sort of remove those. And ultimately I said, you know, I'm not really enjoying this anymore. I'm going to now focus on my career outside or playing directly and focus on helping the next generation not make those so they don't have to leave the sport, you know.
But that's curious, isn't it? Because I think you're in a very fortunate position where you've seen things perhaps not done as well as they could have been, and now you're in a position to influence change. And I think you get quite cynical people in sport, whether it's, you know, for me as a coach or, you know, parent roles or whatever it is, and almost the kind of, oh, same old, that happened to the last generation, it'll happen to this generation. And I think if 10 years ago you'd have talked about virtual study, people would have laughed you out the door, and perhaps the only things we'd have heard of would have been the old DVDs for language tools. If you remember the, I can't even remember what they were called, but the home things you used to have to learn a language. But now the last 3 years have supercharged people's adoption of technology, but I think open-mindedness to how things can get done, because it wasn't just education that went through that journey over the last 3 years. You know, the business sector, you know, a lot of companies are completely turning, you know, from flexi working to 4-day weeks to working from home, all of these sorts of things. When you actually look at it and go, well, if the business sector's learned all these things and moved forwards in the last few years, surely there's some scope for this in the education and the sports sectors. And I guess that's where, as an organization, you're at that cross section to say, well, look, we're already, you know, up and running, but actually the learnings that I think the wider world now probably appreciate a lot more than they would have maybe even 5 years ago. Like, what's that experience been in terms of engagement over the last few years since a lot more adoption, if you like, of remote technologies?
Yeah, so at Minerva, we use a method called flipped learning, and that's pretty similar to what you would do at a university standard. So we introduce our students to a concept before they actually go into a lesson, so they have a better grasp of it. They can do some research, and they're then coming into the classroom with already that knowledge, and they then cement that knowledge in the classroom. And that, we find, is a more efficient way of learning, rather than having a student just come into a lesson, as some bricks and mortar schools do, and, you know, saying, today we're going to do algebra. And the student's like, right, okay, well, what is that sort of thing? So they already have that understanding, and we use a virtual learning platform, which is where all the self-study is done. So students traditionally in a school day would only do 1 or 2 hours of live lessons, and all the rest is a complete self-study, which is obviously very, very flexible around their timetable as well. And yeah, like I said, it we find that it works really, really well. Obviously, we can have recordings to all the lessons, so if a student is unable to attend for any events, then they are provided access to the recordings afterwards as well.
So just to jump on that, because you mentioned around the efficiency element, and I think that's something that perhaps a lot of people never really think about, because the status quo is the status quo. But if you work out across a week how much time you spend commuting to and from school, and then commuting between lessons or sites if you've got a multi-site school, and add all of that up, and say to any sporting parent, I can give you back, let's say swimming training, you're training 8 times a week and you've got 30 minutes each way, and suddenly you give somebody 8 hours back in their life just on commuting time alone. That's a huge saving, but it's not just like financial and time saving, it's the mental energy saving. And obviously there's a balance there. You know, you can't have a hyper efficient day where, you know, wake up, sport, straight into a virtual classroom, straight back to sport, and then you finish your virtual stuff and then close your eyes and go to sleep and it starts again. Like, there is a balance there. But I suppose for the sports that are quite commuting heavy, if you like, or have quite high training volumes, rowing, swimming and stuff like that, that must be almost like a light bulb moment for them within a few weeks even, where they turn around and go, ah, I get it now.
Yes, I would 100%, you know, think that at the school at the moment, the majority of our sports pupils are either go-karters or tennis players. Tennis, we find that again because of the travelling element, and because they have sometimes daily schedules where they are training throughout the day. They don't train in the evening. They have to train when it's light, because they're training outdoors. So that has to happen between, you know, maybe 9 and 4 o'clock. And yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it's a way of being efficient. And the one hesitation that most parents always have is associated to the social aspect of virtual education. But we always say that, you know, if a student has made that decision to want to become a professional athlete and they're dedicated to it, they will also get the social element through their sport. You know, it's not as though they are simply sitting at home in front of the laptop all day. One of the benefits is actually that because of that efficiency element, you are gaining more time to spend with your friends. Whereas at traditional school, you might go to school, you finish your lessons, you're straight into the car, off to training, you come back at 8 o'clock at night, and that's you done then. So with what we're offering, you just have that ability to sort of really manage your day in the best way possible, and be flexible around when, you know, you are putting certain things in the diary. And if you are seeing, for example, I'm a bit tired today, right, okay, I'll just have a 20-minute power nap today in this slot. And, you know, whether it's a physical school, you have to go into the lesson and you have to sort of be there, and you're like, oh, I'm knackered, I'm really tired. So yeah, definitely lots of benefits from that point of view.
I think I can speak from my own experiences. Like, I've done an undergrad and a master's. I did the undergrad face-to-face and I did the master's virtually. And I think that they obviously both have benefits and drawbacks. But I do think, had I done a virtual degree alongside my full-time training, number one, my academics would have been better. I was asleep through half of my lectures, I think. But equally, my recovery and opportunity to perform better in sport would have been significantly better. And I think, you know, it's different for everybody. Everyone has their own circumstances and it's what's finding right for them. But I guess you must be seeing it to a point now, having been up and running for a few years, where athletes are starting to see the longer term benefits of it in terms of like their long term sporting trajectories, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. It, you know, what we're doing is growing and is being more and more talked about in the athlete community as well, because what we find is, well, it's giving an athlete an advantage, you know, and the other athletes in the same sport are sort of seeing that. Tennis is probably at the forefront of this, and they're seeing that and saying, oh, he's got more time to go to training. He's better balancing his lifestyle, and he's not as tired. You know, what's he doing? Oh, he's doing online education. Well, maybe I have to follow that route. And, you know, the bar is always increasing. I always, when I go to tennis tournaments and I see these 13-year-olds playing, I'm amazed by the quality and the standard that they are producing already at that age. And that is just getting better and better. You might see the same in swimming. But I think, yeah, most sports are getting better and better, and every little bit that can give you that competitive advantage, you know, athletes are taking it into consideration now.
And I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because even if you take, you know, mainstream, normal school, normal sporting commitments for a teenager, if you actually look at the amount of consumed data, if you like, whether that's education for sport, you know, a podcast, audiobook, something you're interested in, or you just, you know, flicking through TikTok and whatever it is, people are already accustomed to absorbing significant amounts of information digitally. So it was almost like a perfect storm for you guys, because for a few years now, things have been shifting. And I think there's almost that kind of push and pull between like old school and new school, excuse the pun, in the sense of actually, no, we've always done it like this. We must do it like this. And I feel like it's kind of why I started the podcast in the first place, to find people. And I remember my first episode I did speaking to the founder of an organization who had employees in 9 time zones, and he didn't have a square foot of office space. And I interviewed him just before Christmas in 2019 going into 2020. And we spoke again recently and talked about how they'd weathered the last few years. And he said how many companies really struggle because of their office space commitments, and actually people that are prepared to think outside the box and try something different. And I think people will see it out there, you know, whether it's in the gallery at tournaments, talking to people, or just through stuff like social media or sharing stories like on podcasts. But I do feel like people are becoming more comfortable swimming against the tide and actually trying something different, because if sport is truly what we say it is, it's all about the athletes and their needs, then how we support those needs, the rest of the system around that human being does need to adapt. And that includes education.
Yeah. And I think just going back to your point earlier about, you know, almost defining success, you know, I don't define success as just the performance element of it. I define success as also the well-being of the student, their academic attainment, as well as their sporting performance and, you know, the balance that they have in their lifestyle. And that is what we are seeing, and that's what we're defining as success ultimately, not they've gone on to win this championship or that tournament. Obviously that's great, and that's, you know, what we do want to achieve, and we do hope that our athletes will go into achieve that. But ultimately, you know, what's most rewarding for me is that I can see these young individuals are just leading a bit more of a balanced life. Like you say, it's hard, you know, there are a lot of sacrifices in being a young athlete. And, you know, when I speak to our athletes, they say, look, like, since joining, this has just been so good because I've just had more time to like relax and a bit more time for myself when I needed it. And ultimately for me, that is success to a certain extent. You know, that's great. That's what we want. Because mental health, you know, if you're not in a good place mentally, you're never going to perform, from my point of view. So it's not just about giving you more training time. It's actually about giving you some time back to focus on yourself and, you know, your other identities, which I mentioned earlier. And I think that's the biggest driver for success and performance. If you're happy and confident, then that, you know, that is better for me than training 10 hours a day or whatever you want to say, 8 hours a day, you know.
I think that the metrics you talked about there are a really interesting discussion, and I'm sure we're going to see, you know, some interesting research come out in the coming years that talk about this obsession with very narrow metrics. You know, I went back to my old sports college well, pre-pandemic, so at least 4 years ago. And I remember the head of PE saying, at the time when I went there, it was PE every day. It was a sports college back in the day, as they used to be known. And they said, oh, it's optional from year nine. And I look back and I think, why? And they were quite open about it. They were like, we are targeted on English and maths because that's what we're funded on. And I'm like, I just, that baffles me, because that's assuming that everyone is going to go on and that will solve all of their problems. And that would be great if it was in, let's say, fit for purpose. And I don't mean that in a really condescending way to the system, but how can you leave school and not have an understanding of tax, an understanding of the things that you're really, really important from a mathematical point of view? And yet there are things like sport, which we know is hugely nourishing, or the arts, or whatever other activities set outside those core subjects, and they almost get neglected in mainstream. And I feel like, especially with what you guys are doing, having that flexibility and that adaptability to really kind of what you mentioned earlier around nourishing the person and actually making sure that balance is there.
Yeah.
That must be a kind of, you're almost on like the crest of the wave, right at the forefront of where hopefully the education sector could be moving towards.
Yeah, hopefully. And, you know, the school is attractive for lots of different types of individuals. It's not just athletes as well. And I think you made a very good point there about, you know, also how we prepare our children for the future world and things that they need to be aware of. And sport is one of those things that I think is going to give you invaluable skills, transferable skills. Also from a physical health point of view, I think, you know, if we talk about the NHS, it's probably because we've been cure rather than prevention, you know. And I think physical activity and sport is one of those things that would really help as a country, just, you know, have a better lifestyle and better mental health, because that's another thing I think is, you know, we talk a lot about mental health pandemic. Sport is crucial for that, and it's taught me so many things, in addition to, like I said at the start, helping build friendships with others. But, you know, the transferable skills that I take from my sport, the dedication, you know, those have stood me in good stead, for sure.
So looking forwards then, as we've alluded to there, what does the future look like for both you, but also for Minerva in the way it's heading?
So for me, really important to continue supporting the athletes that we have on at MBA, and to try and continue growing awareness of what we're doing. I would like to get to a point where, you know, everyone knows who we are and that this is an option that exists for them. Ultimately, if they don't end up joining MBA, then that's not a problem. You know, I always say it's not for everyone. But to having a real community of young athletes for me is would be amazing. I want to try and have, you know, let's just say if we go to 100 athletes that are, you know, together learning from each other, building relationships, they're all on the same journey. And, you know, a young athlete from swimming can take something from a young athlete from motorsport, likewise from football. And for them to really sort of have that bond and that togetherness, and, you know, we're on a journey here, we're going to support each other to achieve our goals. And for me, that would be incredible, because you've never seen a school where there's 100 top performing athletes. I don't think that exists. But if we can create that, then that would be obviously fantastic. And you know, obviously, yeah, that's part of the school goal, but ensuring that all our athletes are, you know, maintaining a good balance, that they're performing academically, that they have good mental health, and ultimately if they can go on to achieve something like winning the Olympics or something, then that's a big bonus. But yeah,
I think there's something in that, because talked earlier about purpose and that sense of like nourishment as a person. And I think I was unbiased because I went to a sports college, but even then you could count the swimmers, my sport, on one hand, and there was always that sense of lack of belonging. And yet, if you ask me about, did I feel like I belonged somewhere? Yeah, at the pool, you know, around my swimming friends, if you like. So if you get to a point where you have a place where young people who are going through a huge life change in terms of their actual life growing up, going through those teenage years, but that is blended with their sporting peers who are all on the same journey, you know, in different stages, perhaps different commitments in different sports. But I think that sounds like a really healthy environment to move towards, and kind of really keen to see where it goes for you guys, because I do look back and I think there's probably a lot of athletes out there who will be listening to this thinking, or former athletes, I should say, who can think, if I had that sort of thing through my teenage years and into my 20s, my sporting journey might have looked a little bit different.
And just to add finally to that, I think it's about perspective is a beautiful thing. If we think about, you know, my experience from football, I was engrossed in that footballing bubble, which had a really big impact. It was just football, football, football. And that led me to believe certain things, values, you know, some of the other lads, you take on their traits to a certain extent. But I think, you know, with the community at MBA, where we have students from over 30 countries and all those different sports, that is, you know, it's different because they're going to learn, like I said, from each other, from different sports, and bring different perspectives to the table. You know, for me, I used to think training, you know, 2.5 hours a day from football was quite a lot when we had a double session. But, you know, other sports train 3 times a day. So for me, that would have been a real eye opener to say, oh, actually, you know, the swimmers are training 3 times a day. They're doing 5 hours in the pool. You know, why are we only doing 2.5? And, you know, it's all about that understanding. And yeah, that's ultimately what we want to try and achieve. Great friendships, great relationships, learn from each other, and, you know, hopefully, you know, bounce off each other, motivate each other, is the goal.
Fantastic. And I guess there would be one more thing I'd ask, and previously I'd ask about message to your childhood self, but I feel like we're all where we are because of perhaps the decisions and the journey we've been on. So for young athletes just starting out, perhaps, who have those lofty goals and ambitions, whatever sport it is, what would your message be to them and their parents?
I think for me, it's crucial to, you know, don't associate yourself with purely being an athlete. You know, so big for me is that you are first and foremost a human, a person. You know, previously mental health has been stigmatized a lot, especially in sport. That's changing now. But, you know, don't sort of just purely go down that route, pursue other interests, be involved in as many things as possible. And if you're missing a training session one day because you've got something else that you're really, you know, passionate about, then that's fine. You know, there's nothing wrong with that from my point of view. Just be open to learn, listen to others, take on advice. A lot of the times, you know, some coaches might not like this, but, you know, be confident in your own beliefs as well. I think in football, we are sort of indoctrinated a little bit to, like, you have to do this, or, you know, almost fear is brought in, put into us. And for me, that's, I think, why I, as a young player, I was so good, because I was like, I don't have any fear at the minute. You know, I'm just playing freely. There's no pressure. But the more we sort of sometimes take other people's fears as well, because they're passed on to us, you know, the more we can suffer from that. So be confident in yourself, in what your beliefs are, and, you know, don't always, you know, I suppose, follow what everyone is just telling you. If you believe that that's not the right thing to do.
I can feel some clear lineages here to episode 17. We had the producer from Netflix's Athlete A, the gymnastics documentary, come on the show, and she talked about normalizing a culture of fear. And she said, I'm at an age now where I'm not worried what people think of me, and I just say what I believe is right. And I think that's a lovely message to pull it all together, to almost say, don't wait for it to get to a point when it's negatively impacting on your child and the experience they're having, and actually believe in that power of your own voice. So that's a really nice way to pull it all together. Fabian, just a huge thank you. And I know in our next episode, we're speaking to Hugh, who's also part of MVA. So it'll be interesting to hear it from his perspective as well. But just for now, we'll obviously include all the links to what you're up to in the notes below. But just a huge thank you for sharing some time with us. Thanks again to Fabian for sharing his awesome story there. You can find out more about Minerva Virtual Academy through the links in the show notes. Make sure you're following us on the socials. We are on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just search for the Rogue Monkey Podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel too. Have a great week, and thanks again for being part of the Rogue Monkey Podcast community.